jumping right in here to get my thoughts about this second debate that just finished. Bernie was asked the first question, and I just got to say in response to what he said, Bernie, at some point you need to understand that taxation is theft. Americans do not want to pay more taxes. We just need to end the wars and stop wasting trillions, you fool. Americans are sick of paying for all this bullshit that our government does. Stop trying to raise people's taxes. Come up with better solutions, man. God, it's annoying. Got that out of the way. This Hickenlooper fella, who apparently is a scientist, then calls out goofy parts of the Green New Deal, which I found interesting and refreshing, actually. Mayor Buttigieg says we should be refinancing student debt. That's an interesting concept that I think needs further discussion and attention paid to it. Andrew Yang's ideas definitely need focused on more, way more so than what can be obtained from like a 30-second soundbite. Eric Swalwell telling Biden to pass the torch repeatedly was actually pretty good. He said that he actually witnessed a speech that Joe Biden gave when he was 6 years old. Hey, buddy, pass the torch. And I'm no fan of Swalwell. I think he is hands down the biggest grandstander in the entire 25 Democratic candidate field. But this was a good moment for him. And, you know, asking some of these old guys to pass the torch in certain respects is appropriate. Especially when you're talking to a guy that's been a warmonger for multiple decades. Even though that's not why Swalwell asked him to pass the torch, but that, I guess, is neither here nor there. Joe Biden wants to freeze college debt for those making less than 25K until they get salaries that are above that, so I guess they can then pay the debt back. Like, if we're going to do something like this, why don't we just, for people who are extremely low income like that, why don't we just waive the cost? I mean, we have so much money and we waste so much money. Why do we need to come up with this situation where they actually need to pay it back the minute they get over 25K in salary? Like, that's not even that much. If you're so low income that you cannot afford college, why do we have to strap them with any debt coming out of college? And again, I'm not trying to come up with legislation right here on the spot, but just from a compassionate perspective, if we could waive college tuition fees for anybody, it should be the extremely low income people who can't afford for those opportunities. Why then, the minute they get an ability to start banking some money, do we need to then start taking that money back from them? Kamala came with a food fight zinger when everybody was trying to talk over each other, which was pretty, the fact that they were all trying to talk over each other for damn near a minute straight was pretty funny. And then Kamala brings out this food fight zinger. It totally reminded me of like something Hillary Clinton would like want to say or has dreamed up in her best case scenario. She was probably wetting herself seeing such a well-placed zinger by somebody else. They asked the candidates again, like they did last night, who would want to keep their private insurance, health insurance. And again, 8 of the 10 said they would keep their private insurance. Bernie and Kamala went out of their way to say, no, I actually want government-run health care for myself. Well, if that's what you want, then shouldn't you have already given up your private health care insurance already, just to lead by example? I mean, that's where my mind goes, but okay. Buttigieg says you need to be able to explain how you're going to pay for things. Oh, what an adult thing to say. he's meaning it in a response to, like, socialism from a healthcare perspective, I guess, or whatever, or free tuition for all, that type of stuff. But how about we apply the same premise to foreign policy? Only a few candidates would ever have that thought. Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, maybe Tulsi Gabbard. That's about it. Buttigieg also says that he supports Medicare for all who want it. Nice little distinction there that needs added. I like that. Candidates repeatedly said healthcare is very personal to them. Almost everybody on stage kept repeating this. It's very personal to me, and here's why. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, that's great. And I'd hope so. But decades of action, looking backwards and reflecting on the healthcare system and the price gouging and the, you know, astronomical costs and what is allowed to be done in all kinds of areas in regards to healthcare, doesn't really show that it's very personal to any of these elected officials who have held seats for years and decades. But to follow up on the it's personal to me approach, why does it need to be personal? This is what I'm thinking. Why does it need to be personal for you to actually care? Why can't you just want to do the right thing for strangers who are innocent people as well? Like, why do you have to recall? I mean, it's nice to recall a situation that affects you personally, a mother, a brother, whatever. But shouldn't you just care? Shouldn't you just be passionate and care regardless of who it is? I'm not saying they don't, but it's just like the framing of that rhetoric is just like kind of off-putting in a sense, especially when everybody's repeating it. How about we just care about everybody and want the best for everybody? It shouldn't need to be personal. You should just want to do something good for a stranger, for somebody that's not like you. Marianne Williamson says we have a sickness care system, not a healthcare system. And obviously that was cool. I like that. She didn't get a chance to espouse on that any further, but knowing what I know of Marianne Williamson, and I do like her, going down the path of alternative medicines there and different options outside of the pharmaceutical way, that's a good thing. And hopefully she gets a chance to, in a public manner, go further with that notion, because we do have a sickness care system. It is keep people perpetually sick so they go back for treatment, which then causes another illness through side effects, which then allows them to get treated for that, which then causes something else, which allows them to get treated for that. And it's just this vicious cycle. That's what she means by that. I did note that Kirsten Gillibrand and Kamala Harris keep shouting over people repeatedly to get their words in. At this point in a debate, I know I risk being called a sexist by saying that, but Marianne Williamson wasn't shouting over people. And some of the guys were trying to, you know, interject consistently, but it was just very noticeable how Gillibrand and Harris kept talking, trying to talk over people and talk past the time, like repeatedly. Kind of annoying. All the people on the stage say they support covering all non-citizens under their healthcare plan, which is just like, okay, that sounds good. And you can sit there and say, yes, I'm compassionate, and here's why I'm going to cover everybody on the planet under my healthcare plan. But ultimately, you have to get into the weeds of like what that actually means. You have to unpack what that does to like the country, and nobody wants to do that. That's just childlike, in my opinion. Joe Biden drops a uncomfortably long, rambling statement about healthcare. This does show his age. Again, not trying to be ageist in the era of political correctness. I have no problem with people running for president who are, you know, 60, 70 years old or whatever the case may be. But this really does show Joe Biden's age. He's not sharp. He's not very sharp. There was then an endless section on immigration and images of children in cages. A lot of emotion here, of course, because it's all about the images, which is basically a picture. You put a picture up. We saw this picture of this, and it brought up this reaction, and I reacted to it. And it's, you know, it's a visual thing. We all know as adults that it goes deeper than that. It's way bigger than that. You know, I'm a photographer, so I respect and admire the power of a picture. But at the same time, there's a lot going on here. So this whole section, there was a lot of emotion flying, a lot of rhetoric flying, and really no substance. Because if it was about substance, somebody would have brought up the fact that Barack Obama's administration, which Joe Biden on the stage was the vice president for, they instituted this policy. They did the same things as Donald Trump. Nobody brought this up. No look back at Obama's administration. This is just partisan hackery at its best. Williamson talks about the government taking kids, calling it kidnapping. Technically, yeah. the caging of kids, or separating them from their parents and then putting them in structures that restrict their movement to whatever degree. She calls that collective child abuse, mental torment. I would not disagree with that. She says it's a state-sponsored crime. I mean, these play. It is unfair as well how harsh it sounds, but it's also unfair how the kids are being treated. And it's also unfair that their parents put them in that situation. And it's also unfair to the parents that they had to flee a situation that was horrible to try to come here in hopes that it was better. There's a lot of unfairness going around. One thing Marianne Williamson did say, dovetailing her point about collective child abuse, is she calls out American foreign policy in Latin America for the reasons why people are fleeing. This is why I like Williamson, because she takes a moment to say something very necessary and very valuable. And of course it didn't get any play because we don't want to talk about foreign policy, but it's necessary to make that point. And she made it, so kudos to her. I wrote down Kirsten Gillibrand is a grandstander. She is the female version of Beto O'Rourke, and even way more partisan, if you can believe that. Buttigieg mentions the hypocrisy that's going on with Christians then talking about the need to separate kids at the border and stuff. Good point. I love calling out hypocrisy in any way that it rears its ugly head, but there's also a lot to go around here on the point of hypocrisy. Like a lot, like a shit ton of a lot. Anyways, then one of the moderators says that the Obama administration deported 3 million people. Oh shit, there we go, with some actual reality, which is actually more than Trump, at a higher rate and pace than Donald Trump is doing. And the entire arena cannot deal with this fact. It just goes unresponded to. They just like pretend it's not happening, which I don't want to speak on behalf of America, but that's not going to play for a lot of people in America. That's just not going to play. You just can't do that. You can't just ignore that or not respond to that or act like it isn't actually a thing. You can't just ignore inconvenient information. Bernie brings up Honduras gang violence and how that's a problem and how we have to pay attention to it. Again, this is something that is not unpacked. Democrats, by and large, would rather just collectively say that everybody coming from Honduras is a victim and not point out that in Honduras, it isn't even about Honduras. This could be said for any number of countries. But it also needs pointed out that there's gang violence here and they're seeping in with other people that are fleeing that same gang violence. Not everybody is above the fray and a great person here. And again, Donald Trump tried to make that point very badly, implying that, you know, the majority of people are rapists and all that stuff. Very clunky, very idiotic. But there needs to be some nuance with the way Democrats talk about stuff, because it's not everybody is above board and everybody is, you know, peaceful and not doing blatantly wrong and illegal things. There's elements that are also coming in that are also stoking many things that then are then used as reasons from the other side to scapegoat everybody. So you have to call out bad when bad happens. It's just like, and I'm getting way off topic here, but it's just kind of like when a police officer shoots an unarmed black person. We can't blame the entire police department, but the police department shouldn't collectively excuse what one of their own did and take it as an attack on the entire department when one of their own is rightfully being called out for taking bad action and illegal action against somebody. Nuance, we need more nuance. There's a courage in having some nuance or attempting to have some. There's a courage there and we need way more of it from all sides. Michael Bennett says our biggest threat is Russia. What a moron. Andrew Yang surprisingly then follows that up and also says Russia is our biggest threat. Jesus Christ, man. Because they hacked our democracy. This was super unfortunate because I actually like Andrew Yang, but that was really stupid. This was, up to this point, in my opinion, the best line of the night when Buttigieg says that China is using technology for the perfection of dictatorship. A great line and a very true line. He's referring to the social credit system, I'm assuming, and the mass data collection, and then the overarching control grid of government and controlling everything that comes down through your daily lives, through the internet, etc. Again, let me repeat that line. China is using technology for the perfection of dictatorship. And he follows that up with, he fears that China justifies these actions by citing our, meaning the United States, our far more chaotic model with all of these divisions and etc. Which is a fair point, but also I don't know what he's applying. Is our chaotic model bad? Not in comparison to communism. There's fair points there, though, and I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he's clearly not implying that a stricter government-ruled society is better than what we have here. We do have a very chaotic and tribal problem in many different areas, but in that same breath, I'm going to say we are still the freest country in the world in many aspects, and that should be celebrated. Because there is no model, no matter the model that you want to cite, there's no model that's worse than the tech-based, technocratic, communist, Chinese model. There's no model worse than that. They are the worst model, outside of maybe a theocratic Saudi Arabian model where they fucking chop people's heads off for, you know, disagreeing with any laundry list of things. Those are both hell on earth, basically. At this point, in comes good old Rachel and Chuck. Maddow makes the point to say, we need less audience reaction, which would then equate to more time for the candidates. And I'm just thinking, hey, how about we get less moderators talking, and that would also equal more time for the candidates. Buttigieg's answer to police violence was actually pretty decent. Swalwell follows it up, butting heads with Buttigieg and saying repeatedly, hey, you need to fire that chief. Buttigieg gives Swalwell a glare like he's got an ass beating coming, basically. Kamala calls out Biden for talking kindly about segregationist politicians. Biden says that's a mischaracterization of what he actually said and did. Biden then makes the point that he was actually a public defender and not a prosecutor. Oh, damn, shots fired right there. Kamala Harris, actually, for all her rhetoric about lifting up her own community and helping black people, she was a prosecutor. Harris was the prosecutor that used Biden's crime bill, used the crime bill that Biden and the Clintons got passed. That's the legislative framework that Harris prosecuted out of. No one on stage makes that point. Missed opportunity, guys. There was a question about gridlock. And will Democrats make the gridlock that exists better? I don't even care what the candidate said because it doesn't. I listen to him and just fuck that. Never, in my opinion, never has a party, meaning the Democrats, never has a party been worse and more tribal than today. Never. Never, never, never. So for any of them to talk about how they're gonna solve gridlock is a joke, actually. They need a major shift in order to even entertain taking on that question. Joe Biden talks some nonsense about the 2008 economic downturn. Crash, etc. Says he saved us from going into a depression. Wow, Biden taking credit for repeated bailouts of Wall Street banks. And oh, may I just add that Joe Biden voted and pushed for the repealing in 1999, I believe, of the Glass-Steagall Act. Yeah, that Joe Biden, he did that. Which, if there was one thing that caused what happened in 2008, it was the repealing of Glass-Steagall. And they didn't fix anything in 2008, 2009. They just kicked the can down the road, and we've been in a 11-year manufactured bull run since then. And the system and the economy is gonna eventually come crashing down and at a higher, faster, heavier rate than it did in 2008. Why? Because they didn't fix anything. Bernie Sanders then talks about rotating in new Supreme Court judges, which I was unsure of what he was even getting at by that. No idea. The abortion topic comes up, and throughout it all, it says nothing about third trimester abortions, which is by far the most egregious part to, I would say, 90% of Americans. Kamala Harris calls those who don't wholly agree with rhetorical climate change lingo science fiction. Then disses Trump for embracing Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin, says Trump chooses dictatorship over democracy. So there you have it, folks. Kamala Harris has declared herself the warmonger of the process. She is the warmonger on the stage. And if you didn't know that already, now you know. Because say what you want about Donald Trump, and there's tons of bad and shitty things that you could say about him, and a lot of it would be true. But the fact that he wanted dialogue, and still, in certain respects, wants the dialogue with Kim Jong-un, and especially with Vladimir Putin in Russia, who is a nuclear power, folks, that's a good thing, because it seeks to avoid war and military conflict and killing and death and maiming and murder. Now, yeah, he hasn't consistently instituted that outlook, because at the same time, he's letting Israel do whatever they want to the Palestinians, and he's letting the Saudis do whatever they want to Yemen, and he's got warmongers in his cabinet, and he's pushing for a war with Iran using false flags, and he's pushing for a coup in Venezuela using false flags. All points taken. He is quite the conundrum. But even in the face of all that, we shouldn't be villainizing and demonizing an attempt at dialogue with any country. And the fact that Kamala just wants to do that and shit can the process of potential peace, fuck that, Kamala Harris. You are a warmonger. This Hickenlooper guy says that socialism isn't the solution to climate change. I agree. Didn't think I'd hear that on a debate stage for the Democrats. Joe Biden then says we should rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. Fuck that. Sanders then repeats Agenda 21 talking points that AOC constantly references, that we have 12 years left. These are talking points straight out of Agenda 21. If you don't know what Agenda 21 is, Google Agenda 21, find out about it. Eric Swalwell keeps, at this point, it's now annoying though, he keeps telling the older people to pass the torch. Swalwell, you need to say more than that. Like I said earlier, yes, there's some value in that notion, but at the same time, you're not just immediately disqualified because you're old. There's much value that you bring to the table because you're old. It's a give and a take. It's a gray area. If you're referencing specifically Joe Biden, at least point out that he's an entrenched politician and a warmonger, but no, he doesn't do that. And at least point out that the Clinton crime bill that Biden wrote was an actual attempt, a subtle way, to blame minority communities for bringing violent policies down upon their own heads. Blame him for that. And because you hold those beliefs disqualify. Not just because he's an old guy. They then ask the candidates, what's the top number one issue of your potential administration? And Swalwell says he will end gun violence. Such a incredibly lazy and such a complete bullshit statement. I wrote right underneath that Biden looks like he's wearing fake skin. I don't mean to, you know, pick at someone's physical appearance, and it's not done in a mocking way. It's more done in like a way to say, like, what the hell's going on? Has he gotten plastic surgery? And like, if so, what does that even say? I want somebody that embraces their age and embraces who they are and what makes them them. Yeah, I guess that can come off as shaming a little bit. I'll take that one. But there's still a little value in what I'm trying to say. I might not be saying it the best way. I also noted that Andrew Yang is not standing out. And this is like, at this point, an hour and a half into the debate. Then we head into guns as a general topic for the whole stage. Swalwell immediately calls for mandatory buybacks of all assault weapons. What in the hell is an assault weapon? If we look at just the English presentation of that phrase, any weapon can be used to assault you, so does that make it an assault weapon? So under the subjective kind of framing of the debate, any gun could be placed in that quote-unquote assault weapon canister eventually. But Swalwell wants a mandatory government buyback. Mandatory. He then says, we should be a country that love our children more than our guns, which I personally find offensive. Because if you talk to anybody, no matter Republican, Democrat, or otherwise, they love their kids. And we all love people's kids. We all love innocence. And it's not a situation where people love guns more than kids. It's not an either or thing, Swalwell. See, this is why I think Swalwell is a grandstander and why I specifically don't like him, because he's an ignorant jerk. He doesn't work off of substance. He doesn't look for context. He doesn't live in the real world. He just wants to sweep in and do it my way or the highway. I know better than you, and this is how it's gonna be done. Using force to quote unquote enforce, it's a loop of violence, actually, if you actually look at it from a genuine perspective. But I wouldn't expect Swalwell to do that because he's not genuine. Bernie Sanders actually then agrees to this government buyback as he is being badgered by Swalwell. And then Kamala comes in on the back of that and says, it's all a great idea. And then she says she'll use executive action to basically obliterate the Second Amendment. So it's just like this one-upsmanship of bad ideas. So when you put all these people in the same room with testy, elevated rhetoric, they all want to be better than the next person. The next person's got to be better than the last person. You know, it's just this one-upsmanship. And unfortunately, they're one-upping each other on bad, sweeping, collective, unthought-out, uncritical, context-lacking ideas. As the only military member on the stage, they bring in Buttigieg, and he says that if more guns made us safer, we'd be the safest country in the world. Look, man, America is actually free. At least the idea of America, what America came out of, is freedom. The Constitution represents freedom. So with that freedom, that means it can't be perfect because certain things are just going to happen. We have to do our best to be the best version of ourselves, both as an individual and as communities. But at the same time, we live in a free country and nothing's going to be perfect because perfection cannot be instituted by government. If you think it can, then we're gonna end up living in a totalitarian system that George Orwell wrote about. That's a fact. And what's also a fact is no matter how many instances you wanna cite, mass shootings, etc., 99.9% of people don't hurt other people with guns, even though we have more guns in this country than we have people in this country. That's the stat. And it goes ignored by all Democrats. And Republicans don't even make that point. Something I really found disgraceful is the implication by Michael Bennett, changing topics by the way, that the world doesn't believe what happened recently in Iran or in regards to Iran because Donald Trump is our president. Like the implication is that Donald Trump lies and so the world can't trust the narrative being put out on what actually is happening with Iran. Like it's Trump's fault. Like somehow we didn't just spend the last 50 years policing the entire world and warmongering in countless different countries and using false flag after false flag to justify invasion after invasion. But oh, Michael Bennett is gonna try to say that no, the world doesn't believe what just happened in Iran because they can't trust Trump. So it's Trump's fault. Man, fuck you. Fuck you and your fucking water carrying for weapons contractors and the military industrial complex and these fucking neocons and neoliberals that are entrenched into our two-party system. Fuck you for even implying that they haven't been creating wars for years, decades, and using false flags and bullshit lies to do it. So if the world doesn't believe what happened in Iran, it's not Trump's fault. It's the fault of historically what America has done for decades. That's where the fault lies, you fucking uncritical dumbass. The fault is in decades of imperialistic policing and warmongering and bullying and false flags to justify more war. That's where the fault lies. Eric Swalwell makes the point that he's going to force Donald Trump to break up with Russia. Surprising that the speech police, Liberal Party, didn't have a problem with that. Because what's that really implying? Oh, it's been implied over and over that Trump and Putin are lovers, and even Colbert, you know, said that Donald Trump's mouth is Putin's cock holster. Remember that? See, they can say whatever they want, though, because they're Democrats. If a Republican says that, they are a bigot and a racist and a homophobe. Double standard, one of about 100 double standards that can be pointed out and highlighted. And the Democrats would be wise to look at those double standards and adjust before the 2020 election. Just some advice. Joe Biden says we should be eliminating the AUMF. Wow, okay, great. But to go after terrorists, which obviously is a hella subjective concept, especially when you look at it through the prism of the NDAA, indefinite detention provision that Obama took Chris Hedges to court for, to overturn Chris Hedges' victory to get the indefinite detention provision struck out of the NDAA. And then the Obama administration took Chris Hedges, a liberal journalist and one of the best, to court with the full support of the Justice Department to get that overturned and to get the indefinite detention language put back in the NDAA. And with that language, Lindsey Graham says, you don't get a fucking lawyer. If you are an enemy combatant, whatever the hell that means, it's wide, subjective, wide open for interpretation, in no way narrow, basically the sweeping way that they can throw anybody under the bus that they choose to. And if you're categorized as that, you don't get a lawyer. The Constitution no longer applies to you. American citizens, does not matter. And that's what happens when you get called a terrorist by these people. So if Joe Biden wants to rescind the AUMF, but also just wants to loosey-goosey continue this war on terror that basically can mean anything and justify anything and everything they want to do, that is a conflicting problem. Bernie Sanders brings up the Saudi Arabian war on Yemen and says that war with Iran would be worse than the Iraq war. Kudos to you for that, Bernie Sanders. In closing, Eric Swalwell says that his kids' diapers smell better than Washington, D.C. I like that from Swalwell. He's got a sense of humor. Marianne Williamson's closing was good. She says Trump is harnessed fear, which he has. And he does use fear as a weapon. He weaponizes it, for sure. And she very seriously says that you want a battle, I will meet you on a battlefield with love, and I'm going to win. And I certainly like the sentiment of that, because at the end of the day, love will always beat fear. It will always beat hate. And if you want to go into battle, the weapon that you should choose is love. It is love. And as hokey and as goofy as that may sound to some people, they can shit on Marianne Williamson and make fun of her and whatever they want to do. But she deserves credit for interjecting that sentiment into this debate, because there's few things more important than that. Hickenlooper says, turning to socialism will reelect Trump. I agree. And again, I've made this point a couple times now. I like Andrew Yang, but he is not resonating in this debate. And I don't know. The closing from Buttigieg was pretty good. He does make the point to say, end the endless wars. Bernie Sanders says in his closing that three people have more money than the bottom half of the country. Thank you for that, Senator Sanders. That's egregious. And whether it's three, or whether it's five, or whether it's seven, maybe he got the number wrong. Oh, it's not three, it's actually four. Well, if you motherfuckers want to argue about that, you're a dumbass. The point is that whether it's three, or 30, or 300, the fact that even 300 or 3,000 people have more wealth collectively than the entire rest of the country, or half the country, is just unbelievably enraging. Now, what do you do about that? Socialism's not the answer, but it's still enraging. Sanders' closing is noticeably angry, but to me, that's okay. That may turn off some people. And he does mention the military-industrial complex, which I found interesting, because he ran all last election, and I don't think he mentioned it at all, because that's one of those phrases that, when you start dropping phrases like that, you're taking aim at the deep state, and you're also setting yourself up to be called a conspiracy theorist by all these fucking spineless lemmings from both parties that just watch mainstream media and are being assisted in their zombification day after day by spoon-fed narratives signed off on by the government. So you gotta risk taking that heat when you drop words like that. And I don't remember, maybe I'm wrong. I could definitely be wrong. But I don't remember Bernie Sanders addressing and bringing up the military-industrial complex in 2016. What I do know, though, is Tulsi Gabbard has repeatedly used that phrase, and maybe that's why Bernie's now using it, because she has really came out hard against so many of these elements that are extremely important and need somebody to call out. And Bernie may see her doing it and may say to himself, hey, I need to get tougher on these things and be more blunt. And if that is the case, it plays into what I personally believe about Bernie Sanders, that he is not courageous and he's fair weather. Because what I've seen consistently from Bernie Sanders is when the going gets tough and when the feet are put to the fire, he backs out a lot of the time. He talks about it, but when it comes to getting on the actions, a lot of times the actions aren't there. And again, not to take away from Bernie Sanders, I like him a lot more than most of the elected people from both parties. But at the same time, he's definitely no Dennis Kucinich in the vein of being principled and courageous. He's more courageous than Joe Biden, far more. He's more courageous than even Elizabeth Warren, far more. That's not saying a lot. That's not saying a lot. So the pessimistic side of me looks at him bringing that up and says, you know what, he's seeing Tulsi do this. Because Tulsi's out there being courageous. He's seeing her do what she's doing, and he's jumping on that bandwagon a little bit. Nothing wrong with it. But it's just, it goes to trust down the road. But hell, I'd like everybody on the stage to be talking about military-industrial complex. Please, can we get that? Please. Biden closed the show by repeatedly mischaracterizing Trump's positions and things that he said, which I found interesting because, not to defend Trump, but like, let's just be fair. Biden, earlier in the night, a couple different times, noted that people were mischaracterizing what he said. Now, whether that was true or not, Biden was going out of the way to make the point that they were mischaracterizing him. So why then, when Biden gets an opportunity, does he clearly knowingly, mischaracterize what Trump has done and said? That to me does not show a good person, because if you know something's wrong, don't do it back to the person that you're up against. Do the opposite, because it leads by example. You can't criticize somebody for doing something and then turn around and do the same thing to them. That goes back to the Martin Luther King quote that I love. Darkness don't drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate doesn't drive out hate, only love can do that. You gotta do the opposite of what you're bitching about. So the fact that Joe Biden didn't do that tells me that he's not a good guy. And just to wrap it up, after both debates, there was nothing on the national debt. There was very little on foreign policy, even less on what's actively going on in Iran with the march, the attempted march towards war there. And I just got to say, man, for all that has went into almost 3 years now of anti-Russia McCarthyism and Mueller's going to save us and Russia stole the election and Donald Trump is Putin's bitch and all this stuff. For 3 years, constantly of that on a day-to-day basis from the mainstream media, and especially MSNBC, we didn't hear jack shit about the Mueller report in either one of these debates, really. They didn't bring up anything. So it's like, what's going on here? Are they just knowingly lying on their daily shows? You wouldn't think they're doing that, right? They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't do that, would they? Hopefully, we can eventually get a debate of maybe Bernie and Tulsi and Elizabeth Warren, Buttigieg, bro Biden and Kamala Harris up there. Get Marianne Williamson up there, Andrew Yang up there, Cory Booker and Castro. Can we get those 10 people in a debate, please? Together? Multiple debates, please? And maybe even that Hickenlooper guy, too. Throw him in there. Can we get a debate with all those folks? I am signing off.